What's up, guys? Welcome to this podcast. My name is Solomon Ali, at Solomon Ali NBA on Twitter, joined by Forrest Walker, at Do Nots on Twitter. How you doing, Forrest?
Hey, not too bad. The weather continues to be good, and the Rockets continue to win.
They continue to be good as well. So, what's interesting is we've spent the past few episodes... Actually, before we get into all that, if you like the podcast, make sure to like the YouTube video, share it with your friends, comment down below, and subscribe for new episodes every week. If you're listening to the audio version, be sure to give us 5 stars on Apple, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Those are the best ways to help others find the show. Sorry, I keep forgetting to say that stuff, so I have it in my script now. So, what's interesting is we spent like the last few episodes kind of talking about everything but the basketball. And meanwhile, the Rockets have won 8 professional basketball games in a row. So, let's do something new this week. Let's talk Rockets basketball for us. We're not going to talk much about the front office. We're not going to talk much about extensions or trades or contracts. I want to stick with just Rockets basketball this week because as we're recording, as I just said, the Rockets have won 8 American basketball games this week. 6 of those games were won after Cam Whitmore, and more importantly, the team's best player, Alperen Şengün, went down. There are several reasons for this. We can get into it, but... Forrest, how have you been taking this all in? Like, has there been anything revelatory during this win streak for you?
I mean, all right. It's been pretty notable that they've been this good and looked still pretty good defensively without Cam and Şengün, obviously. Which is not only that, but Amen looks great. And more surprisingly, Jalen looks great. Jalen Green continues to shoot the lights out. He is on an absolute tear, which is wonderful. Like, it hasn't even... We talked about, like, we need to see him get rid of the bad games out of his repertoire and just, like, have good to great games. He just has great games for the last couple of weeks now. He won't miss, which, great. People have talked about perhaps it's the spacing is a lot easier for him to work with, but... Whatever is happening, Jalen Green has stepped up to the occasion, and I am delighted to see it, because this has gone from a team that really needed to clamp down on defense because they did not have the ability to score in enough bunches to blow people out, to just putting up like 147 points on the Utah Jazz. So that's a marked improvement in terms of shooting. I don't know how much of that is due to player improvement and how much of that is due to like a different personnel and a different shape of the offense, and how much of that is just they're just hitting their shots, because you can't count that out in modern NBA, because sometimes teams just hit a lot of shots. I mean, the Spurs were like the best 3-point shooting team in basketball for like 3 weeks and the worst the rest of the season. So I don't know, it's a confluence of factors. What do you think?
So I have a feeling. I'm glad you hit on that first. That's probably the most like. That's the biggest story, right? It's Jalen Green.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to spend the bulk of this podcast talking about it. So I want to talk about some of the other stuff first, and then we'll get into like a larger conversation about this. So obviously Şengün goes down, and you know, for the most part, like we as fans are kind of like crushed, right? Like we're kind of like, okay, that's the season. You know, like whatever just happened, like they're going to probably at best maintain what they have been so far, right, for the rest of the year, which was a bad team, right? They were like 6 games under 500, right? And so it seemed like, okay, the play-in tournament, all hope is lost for that. And right now you're just going to have to spend the last like 3 weeks just kind of making sure no one else gets hurt, you know, like – maybe at some point you talk about packing it in. You and I talked about this, Forrest, how that was a thought for you, right? Like perhaps if you're the front office, you talk about, you know, kind of packing it in. And Ime goes out there. Obviously, like the first move, the first decision you have to make is like who starts in this place, right? And I thought the decision seemed pretty logical to go with Amen Thompson. Like that's kind of who I thought was the best person to go in there, because you can play 4 out. Now, because Şengün goes to the bench, and now you put in a man, and you're still 4 out again, right? And you can still play with that. And you can play a little bit faster. I think you kind of have to play faster by necessity, because you're not getting the same low post looks with Şengün anymore. You can gamble a bit more defensively. You are a little bit more conservative with Alperen Şengün for obvious reasons. He has limitations. You can't play with you have to play around those limitations. Ime gives this quote after the first game they played, and it got a lot of play. Right, it got a lot of people got angry at the quote, and I didn't really. So I'll read the quote. This is Ime after Şengün goes down. I think it gives us more options without LP out there. That's the only benefit I would say. We could get to more switching and more aggressive stuff defensively. Then we would have to find different ways to score. As much as we can get stops and get out and run, that's going to pay dividends to play in the open court and finding different ways to use different guys. I think we saw Amen setting a lot of screens with the five men out on him. Jabari can pick and pop, and Jock Landale can do some of the things that LP does. So the low post scoring will be missed, no doubt, but the other players will step up and contribute. So I think a lot of people took this as a shot to Şengün, and I didn't view it that way. Like, in fact, I thought he was quite differential to Şengün in that quote, because he talks about how the only benefit, I would say, is that we have more options, right? He very directly starts this quote with, like, the only thing positive I can think of here is, like, we can do more stuff, right? Now, we can't do the stuff that we're best at to the highest degree possible, right? Like, we're a more flexible team, but that doesn't mean we're a better team. He never, ever says in this quote that we're better off without Şengün, but people read it as, oh, we're better off without Şengün. All he's saying is we're more versatile without Şengün. That doesn't mean being more versatile doesn't necessarily mean being better, right? So yeah. I agreed with the quote, right? The Rockets can do more defensively and offensively without Şengün, right? They're not as good of a basketball team without him. They're not as talented. And at the highest levels of basketball, they're going to pay a price for not having him out there. But that doesn't mean you can't do some cool stuff, like some stuff you weren't able to do before. And I don't know, like I read the quote as a very like obvious, okay, like this is a pivot the Rockets are going to make stylistically. And that's kind of what they did. The Rockets, before Şengün's injury, were 14th in pace and 24th in offense. The Rockets, after Şengün's injury, are 5th in pace and 2nd in offense. Now, a lot of that is kind of inflated because of that last game they just played, right? Like, they really ran it up on the Utah Jazz, right?
Sure, and did.
And the competition in general hasn't been great. Like, they're playing some really awful defenses, right? Like, Washington's in there. The schedule has been softish, right? But
yes.
They are utilizing the, you know, kind of a run and gun style, which I think you kind of have to. They're playing Jabari at the five. They're having a man kind of play the power forward, and they're really getting out in transition. And it's not really so much that they're turning their opponent over a lot. It's more so they're starting offenses like half court possessions quicker. They're just playing faster. They're a little bit more zip in everything that they do, right? And you know, like the 15 second possessions that you were feeding the ball into Şengün are like being replaced by like 10 second possessions where Jalen Green is doing like a drive and kick, right? It's just different. It's not necessarily better, I mean, in the long term, but it's just different. It's zippier, right? And I gotta be honest, it's a really fun brand of basketball to watch. I'm a little bummed that Cam can't be out there with these guys, because I feel like in this style, Cam would. I mean, he'll thrive in any style. Cam's really, really freaking good. But Cam and Tari would look awesome in this mix. And I'm bummed they're not out there.
Yeah, I mean, Cam might be back out there at some point this season.
That's true.
That door is not closed. Yeah. I'd love to see him back. This is kind of the style of basketball that I think people thought we were going to see with the Rockets in the last couple seasons. Because this is, you know, young guys running fast, making passes, you know, driving kick, shooting threes. Like, the Şengün style is a very particular type of basketball. And I understand what you mean about, like, and what Udoka means about having more options. Because they are kind of locked into a certain thing with Şengün. I think it's probably long-term and playoff-wise a better thing.
Yeah.
Because it's harder to solve. But in the regular season, being able to just throw a whole bunch of stuff at different teams it can pay off, especially against the teams you should be beating. And the Rockets beating the teams they should be beating is really good. I think it speaks to growth over the season, too, that after a whole bunch of a really difficult middle of the season, they are going out and taking care of business when the schedule does soften up. Right, and yes, obviously, like I do think that strength of schedule is largely an underappreciated stat. I think that doing this against like the Blazers and the Wizards and the Jazz is like not nearly as impressive as doing this against, say the Nuggets or what have you. But it's still good. It's still impressive. It still means that they're a decent, solid team. Like they're back to 500 now, and they look like a 500 team. They look like that's where they should be, and that's real progress. And even without Şengün out there, it's a bummer not to see Şengün out there. The only worry, which I don't think is a concern, will be that, you know, this... I think some people are excited to make a lot of the team being good without Şengün. I don't think the front office is among that number, right? I don't think that the Rockets team is going to overreact to this.
I had a couple people texting me about this, right? Not mm-hmm. Houston people, right? Like a few people were texting me like, hey, should we take anything away from Şengün just not being there and them playing better? Like, is Jalen going to be – someone this morning, in fact, actually texted me. He's like, hey, is Jalen going to be fine with Şengün? Like, right? I'm like, here's the thing, guys. Like, some of this is like they're hitting a ton of shots, as you said. They're 40% from three over their last six games, right?
That is not sustainable.
Right.
But.
And also, Jalen was starting to turn the corner while Şengün was still playing, right? If you look at Jalen's run, that was – we're talking about an 11-game Jalen run, not like a six-game Jalen run.
This hot period started before Şengün was injured out. And I think, mm-hmm. It's been, like, longer now in this run that he's been injured out than when he was still playing. But it was four or so games before he got injured that they started really turning it around like this. So, yes, it's a very good point. This wasn't a Şengün goes out, then they're playing well thing. This is, to me, they all started playing better, and then Şengün went out during the process situation.
Yeah, and then post-All-Star break, Ime Udoka kind of emphasized that the team wanted to shoot more threes. Right.
Yes.
And they wanted to head in this direction. That now they're shooting about 35 to 43 a game, like a modern NBA offense, which is good. Right. It's kind of weird that they kind of deviated from that a bit the past couple of years. Maybe that's something to do with Morey not being here, kind of not enforcing that in coaching contracts anymore. I don't know. I can't speculate. But it is kind of strange that they've kind of deviated a little bit from that identity as an organization. It's not necessarily a bad or a good thing. I'm not making a value judgment here, but that is interesting. So they're hitting their threes. They're playing faster. They're playing a really switchable brand of defense, right? Which with Amen, yes. Jabari, Jayshon Tate out there sometimes. Obviously, you got Van Vliet still playing out there on the perimeter. Obviously, Dylan Brooks, like they can switch a lot more than they could before this, right? And you know, this leads us to Jalen Green. Well, first, I did want to say Udoka does deserve credit to kind of he didn't fold it in, right? Which a lot of people in this position might have felt tempted to do, right? Like personally, watching this team, I might have thought, hey, it's time to think about next season. Let's kind of drop some concepts to like. Build towards playing as a Şengün team again next year, right? He's like, no, let's go. Let's explore this. Let's explore the roster that we have. Let's go see what we can do here. Udoka deserves credit for that, right? Kind of pivoting as quickly as he did. Now let's talk about Jalen Green, right? So he's been, let's just say he's been disappointing for the first 60 games of this season, right? Now he kind of looks. Back on track to being the player that a lot of us thought he could be, like kind of like a multi-time All-Star kind of guy, right? But it is notable that a lot of this is just him hitting his shots, right? I'm gonna read out his stats real quick before we get into like this, right? Before we get into like what's happening, why it's happening. Over the last 11 games, which the Rockets are 10-11 in, and it's not like he's playing well. Outside of the team contest, he's like a plus 155 in these 11 games, right? So He's sure. averaging, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's like 15 plus 15 per game, basically, which is ridiculous. 27.8 points per game, 5.7 rebounds per game, 3.4 assists per game, a steal per game, four threes a game, 51% from the field, 42% from three, 80% from the free throw line. He's been ridiculous. Like, this is an absolute tear. It genuinely feels when I watch him that he's just making a lot of the shots that he was getting before. Like, he's getting the same looks.
Mm-hmm.
He's just hitting them. Like, he's, and if you think that I'm making that up, here's Jaylen before March 1st. 59% from the restricted area, 38.5% from mid-range, 31% from three-point range. Here's Jaylen since March 1st. 79% from the restricted area, 45% from mid-range, 42% from three-point range. Like, his shooting has just completely turned around, right? So, and it's not like... Go ahead.
The three-point thing, you can maybe write off as this is just, you know, he's just hitting them now, 3 points are noisy. But the around the rim is very notable to me. Well, kind of number that doesn't change overnight, usually.
Well, I did want to say, so if you're watching this stretch from Jaylen and it feels a little familiar to you, that's because it is. I'm gonna read some other stats to you. 57% right. from the restricted area, 33% from mid-range, 31% from three-point range. That is Jaylen Green before March of 2022, his rookie year. And this is Jaylen Green after March 2022, his rookie year. 71% from the restricted area, 46% from mid-range, 40% from three-point range. So I, like you, had that same thought, like, so is he just getting better finishing around the basket? And then I looked into his numbers, it's like, okay, so he's done this before, right? So I don't really quite know what the hell is going on here, right?
Yeah.
Like, because... if you look into his G League numbers with the Ignite, the first half of his G League season, similar thing happened, right? He plays. I didn't write down the numbers, but he is inefficient for that first half of his Ignite season. The second half, he starts going off again, and I kind of think it's a confidence thing. I don't know. It's like a streaky shooter / confidence thing with him.
His you know who else does this?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Damian Lillard tends to do this, where he'll go nuts in like March, late in the season, and he'll kind of have a lull in like the middle of the season.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. He does do that. I hadn't made the Lillard connection, but that is true. Like, his percentages go like way off the deep end in March, and it might just be a function of getting into rhythm, but it's also like very tangible that he is shooting this well, right? It does go towards the ledger. Like, he is back to...
And his shot looks good, too. Not his numbers are up, but, like, his mechanics look good right now.
That game last night against the Jazz, it felt like he wouldn't stop, right?
Yeah.
And if you squint and you turn your head a little bit, it's almost like Jaylen's growing, like, hair follicles. Right, and it's like, oh, is he left-handed now? You know, like, right, like it feels like when he gets going from three like that, and he hits, and the step-back jumper is hitting, it feels mm-hmm. Harden-esque, right? And this is coming from two guys who've watched the entirety of Harden's career, right? So like, I'm not just saying that. Like, it just feels like that when he's hitting the three like that. Now, I am concerned that he had that start to the season, and I am deeply concerned about how he's going to become a more consistent basketball player next season, right? Like, there's something here. I'm not sure if it's a mechanical thing with the shot or if it's just pure confidence. Something happens to him at the beginning of seasons where he just comes out a little slow, and then he gets going after the All-Star break. And the Rockets need to key in on that and figure out what's going on and make sure he plays like this. Maybe not quite as good as this, right? Like, this is... he's shooting like 64% true shooting in March or something. Maybe not quite this good, but can we get a middle ground, right? Can he find the middle ground between this and the beginning of the season?
I mean, I'd take this, but we're not going to get this the whole season. No. If we got this the whole season, then he'd be like a top five player or something.
Yeah, that's Kevin Durant. Right, yeah, that's Kevin Durant.
I sincerely doubt he can do this all season. But, you know what? If he wants to go ahead and prove me wrong, I'm open to it. But
you're talking about for the rest of the season or for next season?
Just always. Sure, why not? Okay. I don't think this is just who he is, because that's a ludicrous situation. But if his jumper is just like, the hope is that he's been working on his jumper and that it hurt. All right, working on a jumper tends to break down your shot and then build it back up, right? So I think we can't also count out that perhaps he's just in season been working on it and it gets worse and then it gets better as he gets used to it. So the hope has to be that his shooting is going to be not this improved, but like somewhat improved going forward.
So expect the first 60 games of the season he's just shooting around. Like,
well, that's the thing.
How
is
early
that, like,
should he get to the Toyota Center supports? Like, should he get there like eight hours for the game?
I guess so. I mean, that's the thing, is that he shouldn't be happening every season, though, in that case. So I think the confidence part of it might be something. I mean, I think there's also something you said for when he really just has the reins to the team, he can do more of his stuff, right? Like, he can try to get to the rim more. He can have the ball in his hands more. He can shoot more. And I guess he just needs that to get in rhythm or something. And that to me would be the worry, that he needs to be the number one guy or else he's not going to be able to do this. Like, can he have a few less touches and still be efficient? Does he need to have more touches to be better? In that case, you get a question mark, but we need to see next season to know what's going to happen here, I think, is the deal. Because this has raised a lot of questions. They're good questions to have raised, but I think the hints of, can he coexist with someone like Şengün, who is an obvious first option, is a question we need to keep. We don't need to answer it right now, but we need to like keep looking into it over the course of this next season, I think. I don't know. I mean, if he's this good with the ball in his hands, but he needs the ball in his hands, then you got to make some choices.
See, I mean, Here's my thing, and like my stance on this hasn't really changed that much. Like, I think him and Jalen conceptually him and Şengün conceptually just fit together real, like, hand in glove. Like, I don't think there should be any reason they don't fit together. In fact, when you look at their numbers together, Jalen's still playing better with Şengün, right? But I do think this is a matter of him initiating possessions with the ball in his hands, which I think is more of an indication that he needs to be a point guard in the future. Right? Like, I don't think the shooting guard that's going to last. I really don't. Right? Like, Van Vliet's there right now. He's there to steady the ship and help them get on track in the rebuild. But I think I've said this before, but I'll say it again. Jalen's competition can't be Şengün. It has to be Amen Thompson.
Yeah.
It has to be Amen Thompson. For him to be the best version of himself, in this league, you can't be that and be a shooting guard anymore. You have to be better defensively to be this, right? You have to be much more, right? So I think the best version of Jalen comes as a primary ball handler. So he needs to get to a point where he can be that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's right, and I think that sounds a lot of fun, like seeing Jalen bring up the ball and then slot into, you know, once Fred VanVleet is no longer an important option for the team, which, to go back over it again, Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks are not supposed to be long-term options for the Rockets. They are here to transition to whatever the next thing is. And so the idea of Jalen taking over for VanVleet sounds really fun, because then you could have someone like Cam Whitmore next to him.
Yeah.
And they could really do some fun stuff, and then you could have Amen off the bench, blah blah. Anyway, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Jabari started at the three, yeah. Right? Yeah, like
yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Jabari stays at the four, Şengün at the five. Like, and then the Amen thing is a little complicated because I do have questions. Yeah. You want to transition to Amen real quick, or do you want to stay on Jalen? There's a lot of meat on this bone.
Right? Let's talk about Amen. I feel like we've talked about Jalen a lot. Yeah. Over right. the last several weeks, and I'd like to talk about Amen a little bit because he has been worth talking about, to say the least.
Yeah. Well, one last thing I want to make one last point on Jalen. I think last week I made the point that these other prospects are just better than him. These other guard prospects are just better. I shouldn't have said it as confidently as I said it. Right? This is not a retraction. This is more like a slight retraction. I think with Amen, it's closer. Right, with Cam, I still think Cam's a better. It's controversial for me to be saying this after Jalen just dropped 42 points last night, but I still think Cam, considering what he showed as a 19-year-old versus what Jalen showed as a 19-year-old, I still prefer Cam as a prospect, right? But the Amen thing, because the jump shot is such a concern, and because there are real fit questions I have with him on the roster with other players.
Yeah.
That is a closer competition. So that transition into the Amen thing, I mean, he is so good with four shooters around him. Like, having four guys facing four, I think, like, and I say this as a Şengün guy, like, I love Şengün. This Amen and Şengün fit long term until one of these guys develops a jump shot, or until one of these guys can develop that. I don't know. That's a fit offensively. You can't have two non-shooters on the floor anymore at the same time in today's NBA. I don't think you can.
Right? Yeah, you just need to have You just need that 3-point threat to make everything work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think scoring is just too high for that. Yeah.
Right, and when you put a man in the dunker spot next to Şengün, you're just asking for the defender to slide over and double Şengün, which is why I think Şengün's efficiency dipped towards the second half of the year, because Amen came back, right? Because Amen was hurt most of the year. Mm-hmm. Amen comes back. That second defender is constantly sliding over to guard Şengün, because Amen's in the dunker spot, right? So you put him in the dunker spot here. Well, Jabari's spacing the floor for you, right? There's no that paint's empty. That's Amen's. Right, so
and he's gonna use it.
And he's gonna use it. He's gonna dunk, and he's gonna dunk, and he's gonna dunk. That's what Amen does, man. Amen dunks. Amen dunks.
It's fantastic. There have been so many guards who don't have a good 3-point shot in the league over the years, and you just go, "Damn, can you just get to the rim every possession, please?" And Amen's like, "That's a great idea."
Yes. He's like, yes.
Yeah, I'll just do that.
Yeah. I mean, he who can stop him, right? Because not only is he, like, quite flexible, right? He is, I think, has real strength for the frame that he has, right? He has a way of getting defenders off of him and finishing through contact in a way that I think other guys on this roster can't, right? Fred can't do that. Jalen can't do that. Cam's the only guy who can, I would say, right? Who can just finish through contact like that,
yeah.
Right? Like, Amen is... And he's shooting 70% at the rim, Forrest, right?
That's,
like, for the season.
But that doesn't look unsustainable. That just looks like he's dunking every time down, so of course it's going to be that high.
Yeah, I mean, and he's not afraid to shoot it. Like, which is... You know, when people compare him to Ben... You get nervous. First of all, I hate how the Ben Simmons comparison is like a negative. Ben Simmons, I'm gonna get on my soapbox real quick for just a second.
Okay.
Early career Ben Simmons was awesome. Was awesome. Then he gets hurt. He has the weird nerve injury in his back. And then he has the confidence thing. And then it falls off a cliff. But go look up Ben Simmons for the first 4 years of his career. I think it's 2015 he was drafted until like 2019-ish. Whatever that year, into 2015/14 until 2018/19, that was a nice player, right? There were fit concerns with him, especially with Embiid out there, but he still managed to make it work, and he was also a demon in transition, which is exactly what a man is. He's just 4 inches shorter, right? And is he might be just 3 inches shorter. Regardless, a man is, I mean, a man's just good. I mean, a man's just good. He's smart, and he makes the right play despite being off the ball without a jump shot, which is hard to do.
Yeah. I mean, his awareness is really, really high for a rookie player. Like, he looks comfortable out there. Yeah. He looks comfortable out there. He makes good reads. He makes them quickly, which is really, really shocking, honestly. They just really drafted high IQ rookies this year, the Rockets did. And it's great to see. Amen is a joy to watch every night because he does the thing that everybody wants to see their basketball team do, which is be aggressive every time down, look for the open man, and just, like, never hesitate. He never hesitates, and it's... You're going to see an exciting play, like, what, like 3-4 times a game? He's going to do something that's going to make you, like, want to stand up out of your chair. Which... Yeah.
and he'll do it, and he'll just come off the rim stone-faced. Right? Because a man doesn't make facial reactions.
No, right? He doesn't. Right? He does not.
He's just like...
He's dunk. At work.
Right? Like, doesn't do it. Doesn't... Like, Jaylen will scream. You'll get the crowd all excited. A man, dunk, run back. Like, robotic almost, right? But I love it. I love this robot. I love him. He is really, really fun to watch. And we'll talk about Jabari. Let's talk about this scuffle that happened last night, because it is going to kind of play a role going into this week. So Jabari gets into it with Chris Dunn. Chris Dunn throws the first punch. Jabari kind of clenches his fist. I think he swings. Does he swing? I don't
know. Yeah, he tried to go at him. Yes.
Okay.
It was funny because that was the one moment I looked away from the game, and I turned back, and there was replays of all that happening. But yes, I seem to recall from the replays that Jabari was also trying to fight back, but pretty quickly players intervened to make sure that, like, not much really happened.
Right. I'm confused by this, Forrest. I don't know why Jabari is getting penalized this much. Right? Okay, like, maybe throw him out of the game. Okay, like, I don't necessarily agree with it, but fine. You don't want to encourage fighting. He's getting suspended an additional game. Now, Chris Dunn is getting suspended 2 games, which, you know, cool, like, good that he's getting suspended more. But Jabari was just defending himself. You're telling me that the NBA's official stance is if someone swings at you, you just kind of have to get your ass beat? Like, you just have to sit there? Like, you can't swing? Like, is that what Joe Dumars is telling people? Like, I don't get it.
All right. Now, I want to agree, because I love Jabari Smith Jr., and I think it's great that he is setting up for his guys. But I do think there's very important context here, which is that the Rockets get into a scuffle nearly every goddamn game.
That's true.
This is a team that will not stop scrapping with people, all right? And it's good, right?
Yeah.
It shows that Ime has instilled a culture of, you know, never backing down and fighting back, right? But the league is tired of it, man. they do not want the Rockets to keep getting in fights. I think as much as anything, this is because they keep doing this. And they're like, you have to stop doing this. You cannot keep fighting other teams every time. Yeah, sure, they always start it, but you're always in it. Other teams don't get in fights this often. So I think in a vacuum,
you're right.
Do you
remember when they tried to fight LeBron James? Like, do you remember when that happened? Like, people just forgot. People memory holded it because of how much the Rockets have done since then. But Ime tried to fight LeBron. Like,
man.
We just all forgot about it.
Yeah, this is a tough team. This is a team that wants to physically fight people, all right? Which, again, this is an energy we have not had in Houston in a very long time, if ever. So it's cool to see them. Like, it makes me feel good about their potential playoff chances if they're going to be this hard-nosed. But I think in context, the league's decisions honestly make sense. They cannot have these guys fighting every single time. They cannot have every game have a scrap in it. So, yeah, I get why they're actually going to suspend him a game.
When you explain it that way, I don't hate it as much. Right, like when you this is like more. It's not a suspension for Jabari. It's more a suspension, like a kind of the league like wagging their finger at the Rockets, like cut it out. Like,
yeah, it's a warning shot. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes some more sense. Mm. I will say, like, Dylan Brooks, like, he's a part of this too, right? Like he's a huge part of this. Like, the DeRozan thing was funny because, like, those were two, like, around and find out guys, right? Like, DeMar DeRozan, he's from Compton, right? Like Dylan Brooks comes up behind him, and DeMar's like, no,
yeah.
Like, we're not doing this, right? Not with me. I don't blame either of them. Like, I do blame DeMar for, like, shoving Jalen because he got pissed, right? But, like, he shouldn't have done that. But, like, for responding to Dylan the way he did, like, hey, I don't mind it. Like, yeah, like I get it.
I mean, Dylan's annoying. I don't know. Like, look, his antics are less onerous to me now that he's on the team I'm watching. But yeah, he's a pest. That's kind of his deal. That's why he's there in part.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's very much taken on, like, the new, this generation's Patrick Beverley for the Rockets, right? Like, he is he's very much an irritant, probably more so than Beverley, right? But, like, it is Ime and Dylan both, like, it's both their identity kind of going into the Rockets. Now, I don't want to see this in a playoff game. I'm not gonna lie. Like, if this happens, this could cost them something, right? Like, if Dylan gets ejected for a key game, or if Jabari gets suspended for a key game, this is they should tone this down a touch, right? I'm with you there.
Yeah, yeah. But they can't be fighting guys. They need to have each other's backs and be ready to, like, be physical and push back against teams. But yeah, they can't be like trying to get into a fight like every other game. That's not going to work going forward.
It's like they tried to turn their team identity from the pushovers to, like, the bulldozers, and it's like, you mm-hmm. know, maybe not go that far in that, you know, like, maybe you know yeah. Like, I'm glad you guys are toughening up, right? Like, I'm glad that this is a team that fights every night, that competes every night no matter what the score, but perhaps let's bring it down a touch. Like, I don't mind that. I don't mind that as a message.
Sometimes an overcorrection is a necessary step towards a correction. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I'm with you. But I did want to talk about Jabari, right? I brought that up to talk about Jabari. He's just been steady all season, man. Steady Jabari. Like,
he's a professional.
Just good basketball all year. Just good, right? Like, sure. Does he have down games? Sure. Right. Sometimes the jump shot not fall? Sure. But for the most part, they fall. And for the most part, he's effective every night. And he's defensively, he is every bit what he was advertised going in draft night. Like, I can't remember the last time I've seen a player improve from year one to year two like this. It doesn't happen for us. Like, he was, what was he, 18 last year? Or you, for the majority of last year, he was 18. Then he turned 19 midseason or something. He was a very young rookie. Right, then he turned 20 sometime this year, still a very young sophomore, and he made such a big leap. Last year he just looked like a broken prospect. I'm not gonna lie, like that's what he looked like to me, like a guy with this confident shot after getting skipped on in the draft, right, at number one. And he recovers to this extent, and he's just such a reliable force for Houston, to the point where, like, you told me last year Jabari was getting suspended a game. The Rockets might be better. I'm not gonna lie. Like, this year, Jabari's getting suspended a game. That's a big loss, especially with Shingun now, right? Like, that's a big loss that the Rockets are gonna have to deal with. And, you know, this is a team trying to make the play-in tournament. They're a game and a half behind the Warriors, right? So every game matters. But the fact that I'm having that thought just leads me back to the this dude's just so different. He's just so different, and he's building out his body, and he looks so much more fluid. Like, again, like the yoga thing, I'm a believer. Like, I was never a vegan Chris Paul thing, right? Like, I never bought that, right? I was like, Chris Paul had a year to recover from his hamstring, and that's what happened, right? Jabari's hips look so much more fluid and mobile than they did last year. He looks like a different mover. Right, like, oh. I think this is something. right? Like, I think the yoga was something.
Well, I think the thing about Jabari is that the most notable thing about him is that he is smart and hardworking, and he puts those two together in very effective ways. Like, people talk about guys' effort and motor, like, this is a hardworking guy, he's always hitting a gym, whatever. You can really tell with Jabari that he does take instruction well. He takes training well. He's obviously doing the right training. Like, if you look at his possibility delta now versus, like, when he was drafted, I think the main difference is that the bottom, his floor is raised so much. He keeps raising his floor. He keeps covering up weaknesses and becoming more consistent. And those are signs of, I think, of a really heady, really competent player. Like, this is the kind of guy who's going to be in the league for, like, 20 years, in my opinion. Because
I'm with you, yeah.
Yeah, he knows how to make changes and how to keep himself relevant. Already, he's already doing this. You think he's not going to do this in, like, year 15, you know, when he's slowing down or whatever? He's not going to figure out how he can continue to be relevant and continue to get salaries? This is going to be a keeper, a player. I understand why he was picked 3 behind Paolo Banchero and Chet Holmgren, but he's, like, obviously worth a third pick. He's obviously an excellent player as a keeper for the Rockets or whoever else he ends up playing for in the rest of his career. So, yeah, he's great to watch play because you can tell that he is a grown man out there. He's a professional, and he knows how to make himself effective.
Yeah, and I said it on draft night, like, and I'll say it again, this may have ended up being the best possible situation for him from a basketball fit perspective. I don't think him going to Orlando was going to do him any favors. Like, him having to be that guy in Orlando, like, no. Like, that's not his skill set, right? Like, not yet. Maybe eventually he gets there. But that's not where he should start his NBA journey, right? Like, and in Oklahoma City, I think perhaps there was a pathway for him being a nice complementary talent. But Chet's being asked to do a lot offensively. Right, like, he's kind of like one of their three most important offensive players, whereas in Houston, like, Jabari's like fourth or fifth in the totem pole, right? And like, I kind of think he deserves more attempts, but at the same time, this is kind of perfect for him in that he kind of gets to develop very organically, right? In that, from a ball handling perspective, he kind of is like fourth or fifth on the totem pole. From a creation perspective, he is kind of there, but can I see him climbing the ladder? Yeah, I very much can, because I'm seeing legitimate growth. Like, ball handling, so much better year over year. He's taking the ball. Like, how many times this year, Forrest, have we seen him get the ball off the rim and go forecourt with it and finish?
Right? And we've finish.
Yeah, like, a lot.
And he's confident about it, too. He does it steadfast. He does it steadily. He's steady when he does that. He isn't... Because some guys will do that even though they're not suited to doing it, right? He doesn't have unfounded confidence. He has founded confidence. He knows exactly how good he is, and that's an exceptional skill. Because you're right, yeah, he has gotten better at this, but he's not pushing it. He's not forcing the issue. He just, every now and again, the situation calls for a skill set that he doesn't need to use most of the game. And then he can do it. Which I think is... I really think that...
And I will say this, when he does do mm-hmm. that move, it's like you forget that he's like, oh, they have him too, right?
Yeah,
like, yeah, it's very much that thought that comes in your head.
Yeah, this is the kind of guy that later, like a couple years down the road in his career, whenever they are in the playoffs, is a guy who will like randomly win you a game or two in a series because he's like, hey, guess what? You need this guy to do a thing he doesn't usually do. It's the playoffs, and now that's really helpful that he can, like, ball handle. Now it's really helpful that he can, like, create a little bit. This guy who they thought was one thing is actually something else. I think that kind of, like, latent versatility that he has could be really good once his team actually is relevant.
Yeah, that he can, like, guard Giannis. Right? Like, yeah. Like that's what a ridiculous thing. Like he can do that and do the other things he does on a basketball court. And the mid-range jumper, like, it's still patented for him, right? Like, it's still, like, his go-to jumper, and he still goes to it a lot. Just the Rockets don't have to use it, right? And perhaps, you know, as he gets better, the Rockets will find themselves in a position where it's like, hey, why not we give this guy the ball, like, 12 or 13 times a game, have him score as much as he can? Because, yeah. I mean, he, from an efficiency perspective, there's really no reason for them not to do that now, right? Like, he is kind of like that efficient at scoring the ball. I just don't want to keep an eye on. And a big part of this run, like a big part of the reason I think, like he is allowing them to play this open brand of basketball. The like his ability to stretch the floor and play center is so key to what Houston's being able to do right now, right? Because people are saying Amend's the center. Amend's not the center. It's Jabari, right? Amend's just in the center. He's just always in the center, right?
But, yeah.
Right? Jabari is playing center, and he's stretching the floor for these guys. He's so important. He doesn't get talked about enough, but that spacing he's creating for everybody is opening up everything for Houston.
Hey, you need a stretch five in today's NBA. He is an extremely valuable commodity.
Mm-hmm. And I think actually like having Steven Adams and Jeff Green there, kind of having him as like having those guys as a mentor is actually going to be a good help for those guys, for him, particularly Jeff Green, because Jeff Green was a guy who came into the NBA, didn't know what the hell he was good at. Right? Like that's why he bounced around. You always hear about, you know, people kind of like during games, during broadcasts, you hear about these color commentators kind of poking fun at Jeff Green about how he has been a journey, like a 20-year journeyman, right? Which is, you know, by the way, how often do you see that? A 20-year career journeyman. but that's what he's been, right? And you'll see these announcers do that. But the reason that he did bounce around is because, like, for the longest time, Jeff Green didn't know what the hell he was, right, as a basketball talent. And I'm not trying to make comparisons to Jabari, but I'm saying, like, last year it felt like Jabari didn't know who he was, right? And this year it feels like he knows what he is. He's growing more confident in that role. And having those guys kind of have as a guiding path for him, I think it's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Can we talk about, you mentioned it, can we talk about the playoff situation?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't really have much notes on this because I haven't done the math. I'm not good at schedule math.
Yeah.
But, like, it looks like there's an outsized chance.
So, they're back at 500, 35 and 35, which, honestly, very remarkable given where they were a few weeks ago. Fantastic. You love to see it. This being at 500 is an achievement for them right now. They're currently the 11th seed at 500, right? I was curious at this, and I looked something up, because I was like, they might win, like, 41, 42 games and miss the play-in entirely. That's, like, very much on the table that could happen. In fact, like, the only thing, I think it's more likely that they miss than they make it in, and I think it's going to be tough. But it's not, I don't think they're going to miss it necessarily because they're not going to win enough games, right? I think they could very well make it to 41 wins and miss the playoffs, and miss the play-in entirely. And I was curious, I was like, how often do 11 seeds, like, have this level of win total? Like, how rare is it for an 11 seed to have beat 500 or better? Do you want to know when the last time it happened?
Shoot.
It has not happened.
Yeah, I mean,
11 seeds don't play at 500. This is a really weird year in terms of, like, the middle of the pack. Every team is kind of decent in a way that we just, like, haven't really seen in a very, very long time.
I mean, it feels very 2014 Western Conference-ish. Do you remember that year where every first round series was a game 7?
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Rockets played, like, a game 6 against, that's where they lost the Dame shot, right? Like,
that was,
like,
the Dame year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that year felt very similar to this year, except, like, I don't think there's a little bit more separation up top, right? The top of the Western Conference is a little bit better than the top of the Western Conference that year, right?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
There's very few really, really good teams this year. Like, I think it's a fairly small, like, in the East you have the Celtics, and in the West you have, like, the Nuggets and the Wolves.
And the Clippers.
And the Thunder, and kind of the Clippers, right? Like, there's, like, 5 teams that actually feel like they're, like, serious contenders, and, like, kind of no one else is. But everyone else is, like, pretty good. So as I keep saying, this is a great year to be great, but it's a terrible year to be good. Like, the Rockets in, like, any other year would be comfortably in the play-in situation. I think most years, the Rockets would be, like, an 8 or 9 seed. Like, I think the vast majority of years of the NBA, like, playing at a 500-ish level is going to get you into the playoffs. But they picked a bad year to do it.
Well, I mean, is it bad? Because from an expectation standpoint, I think this is kind of good. Like, and I know this sounds kind of, like, I really do think public perceptions play a role in like healthy front offices, like organizational decision making, right? Like, I think if the Rockets make, let's say they made the playoffs this year, right? I think that would lead to the wrong kind of expectations for them next year, right? Like, oh, they, if they're like an 8 seed this year, that means next year they must be like a 6 seed at least, right? It's like, no, I think there's a possibility they take a step back the next year, right? If they were like an 8 seed this year. Right, because they're still built, they're still growing, or they're still building. You might have injuries, you don't know, right?
Yeah.
And this year, like them being kind of like on the border of the play-in, even if they make the play-in, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, right? Like I think that's kind of like I'm happy
ten,
with that.
Ten,
actually,
10 seeds don't make it in. They just don't. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever it is, right? Like I like that they're kind of there. I don't want them to be much better than that. As crazy as that sounds, like what you don't want the Rockets. Yeah, I kind of don't. Because I think that would lead to the wrong organizational expectation. And as I said, and I know we said we weren't going to talk much front office at the start of the show, but I did say a few weeks ago that I think Rafael Stone deserves an extension. And if you're telling me that the expectation for them was to make, like, the playoffs, like, I think that's wrong, right? And I think Stone deserves credit for what they've done this year, right? And so, like, I would like for him to get, like, a modest extension. So, like, that's kind of why I'm like, okay, this is fine. This is fine. Like, I'm, whatever happens for the rest of the year, if they finish around this 500-ish territory, I'm not going to be upset with what they do. Right? Like,
at this point, they'd have to, like, lose out every game for it to be worrying, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm happy with the season. Like, I'm content with it. Like, they set out and accomplished what I wanted them to set out. Right? Now, Jalen still has to continue this. Right? Like,
yes.
I don't think, like, again, I was not a leap guy, but, like, his numbers have kind of normalized to where, like, they're on par with the rest of his career statistics, right? So I'd at least like that to continue, right? And then next year you can go for the leap. But this year you kind of have to stay at this level, right? Because it gets worrying if you dip below this.
Well, I mean, you have growth within seasons as well. So it looks like they've grown within the season. Honestly, the whole team looks like they've grown within the season. Like, I kind of think the formula for why they're doing so well right now is a combination of the team has actually improved over the season, first off. Like, the players have figured each other out. They do work better together. They have just improved. Like, a number of players have just gotten better. Right? Like, Amen.
Sure.
Yeah, offensively for sure. So the team has gotten better. The schedule has gotten much lighter. It was really nasty for the patches they're losing, and now it's really light and they're winning, which is not surprising. That's what's supposed to happen. But so a combination of schedule getting lighter and the team showing improvement has, like, passed up the continued injury problems, right? So final, like, this isn't really that surprising. They've been in a situation where you would expect them to do well and where it's a sign that they have showed continued growth over the year. Obviously, you'd like to have everybody healthy, but sometimes it can be, like you said, like a blessing in disguise to have to run guys you wouldn't normally run, because then you do get different looks at the team. You do get different opportunities for people to play different ways. So this is a development year, you know, like as much as we want to see them succeed, want to see them make the play-in, would love to even see them, you know, make squeak into the playoffs or whatever, but that stuff doesn't matter. It's a development year. The point of this year is seeing improvement and seeing growth from the players and from the team and from the front office and from the coaching staff. And on that front, it's been an unmitigated success, right? They have obviously grown this year. The wins are not the important part. That's for later. That's for, like, 2 years from now, right? And even then, it's very early. Even 2 years from now is early to be worried about wins. Like, and I think you're right. Like, next year can't be about wins either. Next year, again, has to be about, are we continuing to grow? Are we continuing to see development in our players? Are we continuing to establish the base that we're going to need once it really does matter how well we do? So, yeah, it will be a lot easier to not be worried about the owners breathing down your neck if you are the 11th or 10th seed this year, and then next year you're like the 8th seed. Then everything's copacetic, like, no problem. You know, everybody's happy in that situation. But yeah, if you're like the 7th seed 1 year and the 8th seed next year, then suddenly everything is very different. So I think you're not wrong about that, that it is, like, having room to grow is going to be good, and I think there is going to be continued growth. We'll get to next season, but right now, this is a good end of the season. Their schedule is going to get tougher. They will have a harder time winning games, but being at 35-35 right now is a great place to be. They don't have to win that many more games to honestly have a really strong season. If they can make it to 40 wins, they need to break out the champagne. That's the end of it.
They are they are 13 games better than they were last year already.
Yeah.
Right. Like they're at the 35 game mark. I had them winning 35 games this year. Right? That was my prediction. I was wrong. Right? They're gonna shatter that, whether that's 38 wins or 40 wins or whatever it ends up being. They're gonna shatter that. So, I can't be upset, right? That's where I ultimately end up. I can't be mad at what happened for the rest of the year. Now, if you tell me they lose every single game from here on out, and they get blown out by 20, and Jalen's crap again, right? Yeah, that's not good, right? Obviously, there's some nuance of what I'm saying, right? Yeah. But if they reasonably close out the season how we kind of expect them to, I can't be mad at this, right? I'm very, very happy at what they achieved this year. I think it surprised most people, including me. Like, I didn't see this. Did you see them being this good this year?
I thought they would be 35 to 38 wins is kind of where I suspected, but they're better than that because they got hurt a bunch and lost a bunch of games to that. Like, honestly, they're a 40-42 win team. Like, that's what they've looked like all year. Every metric has them at break even or better, they're a 500 to slightly better than 500 team is how they measured out all season, which is better than I thought. I thought they'd be a little bit worse than 500, and they might end up the season with less than 41 wins. They might end up with a losing record this year because basketball games, but their numbers are good. They've looked good all year. In most seasons, this would easily be a team with a winning record, right? They'd be looking at ending a season with 42-44 wins, I think, in most seasons, which is really impressive. That's really good. They're slightly better than break even. Yeah. Excellent. That's better than any of us expected. I mean, I remember back when the season was starting and their win totals came out and it was 32, right? It was 31.5 or something.
Yeah, I thought it was too low, whatever it was. Yeah.
Yes. Well, but lots of pundits were 10 more wins is a lot year to year. That's a huge improvement. You shouldn't expect that much improvement from this team. And the fact that, they did make a lot of changes. From our perspective, paying attention to the team every day, we could see all the things of them and be that's probably a couple wins there, a couple wins there, a couple wins there, a couple wins there, right? It didn't seem crazy if they'd win 32 games to those of us who are watching the team all the time. But 10 wins is a big jump. We shouldn't just discount what all the national media said, because that is a big jump. That's unusual for teams to make a 10-win jump. And it is. And they should take pride in that. They should take pride in the fact that they went from being an absolute doldrum team to being a pretty decent team within the span of a year. They made the right choices. They made good hires. And they made good signings. It's been a good year.
100%. So I'm going to read something to you. I'm going to say Team X. Team X won 24 games. The following year, they win 42 games. Who is Team X?
That's Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah. That's OKC.
That's OKC a couple years ago.
Yeah, a couple years ago. They made a similar jump. Right now, I'm not saying they're going to be what OKC is. What OKC is this year is ridiculous, right? Because Shea made an MVP leap, right? Which no one saw coming. But he became that guy. I'm not sure if, we'll see if someone on this roster makes that kind of a jump. I think
it's pretty rare. We'll say that.
Well, there's one guy that I think has that upside, right? And it's the guy that's not playing right now, right? If he makes that kind of a jump, I mean, then the sky's the limit, right? But assuming normal growth, I think we can probably see this team 45-ish wins next year. I think that's a reasonable goal for them. Or maybe...
Yeah, depending on the climate of the season. I mean, I feel like it's oftentimes better to contextualize it in terms of, like, net rating. Or, like, you know, like adjusted net rating or something, right? Like, if they're at, like, around a 1 right now, you want to see them at, like a 2, right? If they get a net rating of, like, in the 2 range next season, that's really good. It's only 1 point, but 1 point's a lot in the NBA. And so if they can get, like, a 0.2 positive rating next year, then, yeah, they're going to be in that, like, mid-40s range.
Yeah. For what it's worth, dunksandthrees.com does these projection models for, you know, every team. Right now they have Houston as the 11th seed with 41.3 wins.
That sounds kind of right.
Yeah, I mean it feels kind of right. I mean, and they have Golden State at 43, the Lakers at 44. I mean, that's enough margin to where you have a chance, man. Like, you have a chance. Like, I don't want to get Rockets fans like hopes up, but like, I think you have something to watch for. To close the year out, is what I say.
Ending this year at 500 is a prize in and of itself, regardless of where they end up in the standings. Like, not being a losing team is a big deal. That's great. Like, every Rockets fan should bust open a bottle of champagne if they hit that 41st win, in my opinion, because that is celebratory. Whether they make the play-in or not, who cares? That problem will deal with itself farther on down the line.
I mean, I'll be doing that at, like, 38 wins, right? Like, even if they get to 40, like that's way
great.
Past
yeah.
what I thought them yeah. they were going to be this year. Yeah, the high end has them being 43.5. I mean, that's what they have on the high end of the wins projection, which, I mean, if they hit their high end, they have a chance. I mean, we'll see. I mean, like, a lot of things are up. Like, we're going to have to see how they do in this next game without Jabari. We're going to have to see what they're going to do when their schedule gets tougher. But it's just fun to watch them be good. It's fun to watch Jaylen be good. Like, it's fun to watch Ime be... Like, it's fun for the Rockets to have competent coaching, right? Like this is just... it's just good vibes. Like, I like this. Whatever this is, I like this.
Yeah. Well, it's the next game is against, what, the Blazers?
Yeah, they're playing the Blazers.
Tomorrow. Yeah. And, like, if you're going to have Jabari missing a game, you probably want it to be against a team who has pretty good incentive to tank out right now. Right? Like, if I'm the Blazers, I'm trying to lose every game possible for the last few weeks because they can move their pickups, like, meaningfully. Right? They're, like, one loss behind the Hornets. So, that's no guarantee. Now, I want to make that clear that teams lose to tanking teams all the time because the NBA is a difficult place and losing another player is another difficulty for the Rockets. So, we can't... There's absolutely no guarantee. But if you were going to lose Jabari to a suspension again for one game, I'd probably pick this game.
Yeah, yeah. And on the other side of the bracket, you got the Brooklyn Nets expected to finish at 31 wins. I mean, that draft pick's going to be... I mean, it's not a great draft, but, I mean, it's just nice that
Houston... Hey, pick's
has,
a pick.
Yeah, it's nice that Houston has another lottery pick in their back pocket. And we're going to be doing this draft analysis thing again in, like, a month, which should be fun. Again, I'm actually excited for the draft. I haven't done much research. The least amount of research I've done for a draft in the Rockets rebuild. But I'm excited. I'm excited to get
into it. Hey, I think that pick is going to get conveyed to Oklahoma City Thunder. I think the ship has sailed on potentially getting a top 4 pick for the Rockets this year, and that is very good.
I'm okay with it. I'll take it. Mm-hmm. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher. Forrest, where can the people follow you on Twitter?
@DoNots, DUNOTS.
Yeah, guys. We'll talk to you guys next week.